Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Once again, we've got kind of a regular schedule here joining you every Wednesday. It just has worked out. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. And on the other line, as always, is Bucks beat reporter Matt Velasquez. He was last at Fiserv Forum on Monday night as the Bucks won a thrilling game over the Utah Jazz. Just a tremendous back-and-forth battle, great third quarter, and a just trademark performance by Giannis Antetokounmpo, the reigning 2018-19 NBA MVP, making his case already for a follow-up award this year. He scores 50 points, brings down 14 rebounds, did not turn the ball over, just an incredible performance. So Matt, we are going to start there with our king, Giannis Antetokounmpo. That was pretty vintage, and I mean it is exciting to see him play that well. And on the other hand, this is honestly what we've expected. We talked about how he's actually better this year than he was last year, which is alarming to think. But he just flat takes over games. Utah was missing their best interior defender in Rudy Gobert, and Giannis just exploited everything. He's unstoppable when it's just one-on-one coverage. Give me an impression of what you thought you were what you took away from that performance on Monday night against the Jazz.
You know, I was watching that game, and especially the way it was ending where, you know, Giannis was gassed. He asked to be taken out of the game with just over 2 minutes left. He gets like a 19-second game time rest plus a timeout. And then he comes back in, you know, clearly tired and you know, at 46 points and immediately drives the lane for a dunk, you know, putting back his own miss. And then, you know, gets the ball again and drives again into the heart of the Jazz defense, gets fouled, you know, goes to the line and with the crowd, you know, all excited for him, you know, makes both free throws, gets to 50 points. Just so impressive. You know, I think that when you look at his regular season performances, obviously this wasn't his career high. That was a 52-point game in Philadelphia last year, which was an incredibly impressive regular season game in its own right. But I'd have to say this has to rank, you know, maybe first, at least top three in his regular season performances all time. I think the game last season against the Portland Trail Blazers stands out. I think that was last season, if I'm not mistaken. Now I want to look it up because, you know, they're all running together.
Well, the game against Philly, actually, it's definitely last season, of course, but earlier this year, that was late in the season in March. And I think the only knock on that game is that 52 points, Giannis was incredible. I mean, that's the game where he calls Ben Simmons a baby. It's a very memorable game. It's on national TV on an afternoon. But the Bucks lost that game. So, you know, in this case, not only was he excellent, but they needed every one of his 50 points to hold off the Jazz for a 122-118 win.
Yeah, looking back, that Trailblazers game was 2 years ago. I was like, you know, I remember talking about the other day how, you know, the day before Thanksgiving last year, the Bucks absolutely walloped the Trailblazers. So that couldn't have been the game that he, you know, at the end had that big steal to put the Bucks ahead and then rejected Yusuf Nurkic at the rim to win the game. So that was 2 years ago in 2017. That 44-point game that he dedicated to his dad who had recently passed, that was a very memorable Giannis game, even if I couldn't remember what year it was. But you know, this game on Monday night, just the do-it-all nature of the game, the points, you know, the 14 rebounds, the 6 assists, 2 steals, no turnovers. You know, looking at the numbers, like 4 guys in NBA history now with Giannis, including Giannis, have had games of 50 plus points, 10 plus rebounds, and no turnovers. You know, that's Carmelo Anthony, interestingly enough, who came through this week. Moses Malone and Michael Jordan twice. But then if you look at that group of players and say, well, how many of them had 5 assists or more? That's just Giannis and MJ, like just those two. You know, and this game didn't exactly look like a game where Giannis was going to do that. I mean, in the first half, he was 7 of 9 in the paint. He was dominating in there, you know, realizing that, you know, like you said, without Gobert in there, that he really didn't have anyone in his way. Like, yes, Royce O'Neal did his best, and Tony Bradley was there to contest him. You know, Jeff Green, you know, did everything he could, but Giannis can score over those guys. He can score through those guys, you know, around those guys, past those guys, whatever word you want to put it, he can do it. But then, you know, his free throws were not great. You know, he was one of six to start the game on free throws, and the crowd was getting kind of tense about it. You know, every time he missed, it was just, you know, kind of deflating. But before he went to the line for his seventh and eighth free throws, you know, the crowd kind of gave him like a rallying cheer, and he actually, you know, noticed that. He's normally one to say, oh, you know, I don't hear the crowd, I don't really worry about that. But, you know, he said he heard it, and that gave him some confidence. And he said, you know, hey, like, if they have my back, like, I can do this, you know. And then from there, you know, he made 12 of his next 13 free throws. You know, the crowd was really into it whenever he did make them at first. And then they kind of settled in, like, okay, he's got it. You know, we don't need to give him, you know, these patronizing cheers anymore. you know, but so that was something that wasn't really falling into place. And, you know, even though he was dominating the paint in the first half, his three-pointers weren't falling. He was 0 for 4, and the Bucks were struggling, you know, and they were down, you know, 9.5, and they were lucky to be down 9.5. As a team, they were 3 of 17 on threes. You know, Chris Middleton was out. George Hill sat with back soreness. Eric Bledsoe had three fouls and didn't play very much in that first half. Like, things weren't going well, and to be down 9 was very lucky. But then Giannis, in the second half, you know, first 90 seconds in, gets fouled by Tony Bradley, falls really hard on his right elbow.
Right.
Yeah, he stayed down for a while. It didn't look very good, and, you know, but I saw him on the video board, and as he was laying there, he's holding his elbow, and he just kind of tells his teammates, I'm fine. I'm fine. And he gets up, he makes both free throws, and, you know, both Lopez twins, you know, after the game, they said it was kind of like his rookie of the year moment. The 1993 Disney classic film, where, like, he falls on his arm, and suddenly his shots, like, are starting to fall. He made, like, all but one free throw after that point. He was 3 for 4 on threes. You know, and Robin, we kind of talked to him about it after the game, and he said that, you know, he immediately sensed, he's like, you know, when, like, 50 monkeys all start doing the same thing, like, everybody, you know, that everybody can do it. And he thought that everybody in the arena kind of realized at the same time, like, oh my gosh, like, this is Giannis, like, his like, rookie of the year moment. You know, and so, like, once, you know, 50 people, you know, realized it, like, everybody realized it. And, you know, Brooks said that he also thought that because he saw Giannis make kind of a funny face after making his first free throw coming off of that fall, and he's like, oh, like Henry Roengarter, like that could be a thing. You know, actually we asked Brooke, like, hey, have you talked to Giannis about the movie? Like, do you know if he's seen it? And he's like, I don't know. I asked him about it, but I don't think he's seen it. And it's like, well, it's on Disney Plus. It's like readily available. Like, and Brooke, you know, he said that that Giannis could borrow his Disney Plus subscription if he wants to watch it. So, you know, this whole game, like, all these things are happening, you know, the domination in the paint, the missing free throws, the missing threes, suddenly he's making them after the fall, you know, and then he's exhausted, he asks to sub out late in the game, you know, he's just doing it all, just a multifaceted, highly impressive performance from the MVP.
An on-brand Disney reference from the Lopez twins, who, of course, are probably the world's biggest Disney fans, or among the more high-profile Disney fans. So you mentioned that he was gassed. You mentioned this fall that, you know, it's entertaining that he is able to suddenly make all his free throws after he takes the fall. But, you know, can we get this man some rest? I mean, I know that Giannis wants to play every day. He's not a fan of the load management term or trend that seems to be pervading basketball and really impacting the Bucks, in that they've seen a lot of guys, a lot of major players that have not suited up against the Bucks. And even in these past couple games, it was Rudy Gobert for the Jazz, it was Damian Lillard for the Portland Trailblazers. I mean, they're teams that are, surprisingly to me, sitting out their best players in a season where we thought every team was going to give the Bucks their absolute best shot. You know, some of these guys are actually hurt, but the Bucks have dodged a lot of bullets that way. You've got to think they're going to try to get Giannis some time off. And at some point, they've won 8 in a row. They're on fire. You've seen that they're clearly set up for what's going to come later in the year in May and in June. And it's got to cross their mind at some point. They've got to get this guy some breathers. Do you see that happening in the next couple games? A home game against Atlanta, road test against Cleveland coming up. Maybe this is the time?
It may not. I mean, he's averaging, like, the exact same number of minutes he was averaging through 17 games last year. The only difference is that he missed a game early last season due to a concussion. It wasn't a load management situation. It was a concussion. You know, the first time he got a rest that was maybe dubious in nature, was the 26th game of the season, December 10th of last year against Cleveland in a home game where he sat with what was termed a neck soreness. You know, and at the time, you know, we kind of thought that was probably a load management situation. But I remember hearing later from somebody, you know, within the Bucks that Giannis couldn't, like, turn his head, like, one direction. Like, his neck was actually, like, that sore. It's like, you don't want to put him in the game if you can't do that. But the Bucks, you know, they definitely pay very close attention to Giannis's health and how he's feeling and how he's doing. But they're not necessarily going to load manage him like other teams are doing. Like, he missed only those two, that the first game of the concussion, that second game with neck soreness, out of the first 40 last year. It wasn't until, you know, January 11th, you know, their 41st game, he sat in Washington. And even then, like, that was less about, like, necessarily, like, load management for the sake of load management. It was the Bucks coming off a series of a bunch of, like, really difficult games, playing, you know, the Raptors, the Jazz, and then at the Rockets, where Giannis was beat up. Like, his hip was sore. He had had a really hard fall one of the previous games. He'd hurt his knee, or at least had, you know, was banged up. And so, you know, they just said, hey, Giannis, you know what? Like, you need to sit down. Less because of load management, but more because of, like, you are not at 100%. Like, you need to rest. And so I think the Bucks, you know, their biggest way of handling load management is that, you know, Giannis only plays, you know, on average 33 minutes a night. That's a lot less than most NBA stars. I mean, the fact that his, you know, most minutes came Monday night in a game where he played 38 and a half minutes, like, that's saying something. Because, you know, most players of his caliber are going to play 40 minutes or more in a decent number of games. And he just doesn't do that. Like, they make sure to get him his rest. They make sure to get him time off the court. I mean, even in a critical juncture last night, you know, Giannis was the one who motioned to Bud and said, hey, I need to come out. And that's something that you don't see very often. But Giannis, you know, he takes it as a positive, because he recognizes his own body and what he can and can't do. And he said that he's only, you know, one of the few guys on the team who will do that. You know, but he said, yeah, here's a quote. He said, but it's a good thing. That's a good sign, because I try to play till I'm exhausted. When I'm exhausted, and I know that, and I know that I'm going to be unreliable defensively, like, take me out. So, you know, they manage him within the game, and they keep him to a reasonable number of minutes per night, which, you know, is very different than a lot of players. If you want to, you know, have an example, James Harden averages 37.3 minutes per night. If you want to look, you know, even further, LeBron James, you know, he's averaging 35.2 minutes per night, which is down from where he had normally been during his career, where at times he was averaging, you know, for a 4-year stretch in Cleveland, over 40 minutes a game for 4 straight years. Giannis is not doing that. Like, that's not how the Bucks are using him. And, you know, as long as he feels good and tests out well with the team's medical staff, which I'm sure they're doing on a very regular basis, just to make sure his health is where it needs to be, they're going to keep playing him.
All right, let's look at another injury update. Chris Middleton has obviously been sidelined for a couple weeks here, and part of the reason you would think that it's not a great idea to sit Giannis is because presumably the team's second best player has been out. I know the original timeline was 3 to 4 weeks. We'd be coming up on that in December, but it sounded like yesterday there was a pretty positive update from Coach Mike Budenholzer that maybe Chris Middleton could be back a little bit sooner than anticipated. And I guess obviously the team's been playing well without him. They've been just certain they've won 8 straight games. I mean, they're obviously not missing a beat. How do you think that they've done that exactly? Well, first of all, how close are you, do you think, that we are to seeing Chris Middleton again? And how have they been able to soldier through this? Because we heaped praise on Eric Bledsoe last week, but he is up and down, and he was down against the Jazz. That was a rough game for him. Wes Matthews had struggled early, seems to have found something, so maybe that's an explanation. But, you know, it isn't all Giannis being dominant. That's a big part of it. But how have they been able to sort of patch it together with Middleton out, and how much longer are we going to have to wait for Middleton?
So on the update front, Bud said on Monday that Middleton has had some contact. He's played 5-on-5, you know. I think, you know, and Bud said that there was some action, some 5-on-5 contact stuff Monday morning. But he felt it was safe to say that Middleton's for sure on the timeline, if not ahead of it, which is a positive. The Bucks had two-way forward Cam Reynolds with the team yesterday. He didn't play in the game. He wasn't active for the game. But my hunch is that he was there to be one of those guys who could go 5-on-5 with Chris Middleton, just affording the Bucks with some more bodies, some more fresh guys who could go out there and give Middleton a look. I think that seems like a reasonable thing. It's not out of the realm of possibility if Middleton is ahead of schedule for him to come back maybe as soon as this weekend. Obviously, the injury happened on November 10th, which was a Sunday in Oklahoma City. 3 weeks from that date is this coming Sunday, and if he's ahead, well, the Bucks play on Saturday at home against the Hornets. They also play on Friday in Cleveland. So, you know, it's possible, depending on how Middleton is progressing, that maybe he could play in one of those two games or maybe both of them. I would assume coming off of an injury, he wouldn't play in both. And if they're going to put him in one of them, it would probably be the home game against Charlotte, the second night of a back-to-back. So that's worth keeping an eye on. And when it comes to the way the Bucks have weathered his absence, I don't think they've lost a game since he went out, which is pretty impressive. Going back and looking at the schedule, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in a row without Middleton, and the game that he got hurt, they also won. That's part of their streak of 8 straight wins, the longest since, I believe, 2002. But, you know, the way they've done it is by having different guys step up at different times. I mean, there have been games where Eric Bledsoe has been a 30-point scorer, somebody who has, you know, buttressed what Giannis has been doing, getting to the rim, you know, shooting well from three-point range, setting up his teammates, just doing a lot more offensively, carrying more of a load than he has had to in recent games heading into that night with Middleton on the court. I think it was, you know, Pistons coach Dwayne Casey, when asked about the Bucks playing without Chris Middleton, he said, unfortunately, it's meant Eric Bledsoe doing more. And that was before the game, you know, before Bledsoe played, you know, generally pretty well. And so he stepped up. You mentioned Wes Matthews, you know, 4 for 4 on threes in the third quarter on Monday night, stepping up with 19 points. He's come on in the past few games, shooting really well from three-point range, continuing to play well on defense too. You know, Brooke Lopez has not necessarily been great offensively, especially from three-point range, where he's well below where he was last season. But he's put up, you know, 6 straight games of multiple blocks. You know, and he's averaging, you know, almost 4 blocks a game over those past 6, including 4 on Monday night and the critical one in the waning seconds against the Jazz. Dante DiVincenzo has jumped into the starting lineup, and he, I feel like no matter what he does, he's finishing like every game with 2 steals. He's bringing a lot of energy on defense. He's making 3-point shots. He's cutting, getting to the rim, getting rebounds, just doing a little bit of everything. Sterling Brown has been positive off the bench. George Hill had back soreness and didn't play on Monday, but he's been kind of the team security blanket off the bench, and you know, playing at his speed, his pace, getting aggressive when he needs to, and kind of bringing in that supporting scoring. And so, you know, everybody is doing a little bit of something. Pat Connaughton, 11 points against the Jazz, you know, multiple important efforts over the past, you know, 8 games, where he's not always called upon, but when he is, it seems like he always answers the bell and is able to give the Bucks a little something. to help make up for Middleton's absence. So they've got a ton of depth, and they've been counting on those guys to, you know, when Budenholzer puts 11 guys out there in a game, you know, he's assuming that he's going to get really good nights from a handful of them. You don't know who it's going to be outside of Giannis, but you know generally that you're going to get high quality performances, good shooting from enough guys to win games. And while you might look at this and say, oh well, the Bucks are winning without Middleton, they must not need him. There's one very important person who would disagree with you, and that's Giannis Antetokounmpo, who after the game, kind of unprovoked on Monday night, kind of just mentioned like, wow, like, you know, it's impressive we're doing this all with Chris, but like, we need Chris back. I can't wait for Chris to come back. We need him. He's so important to us. Yes, it's been impressive, but the Bucks will be an even better team when they bring back an all-star from last year and their second best player and scorer.
Bucks, like we said, 8 straight wins, 12 of 13. They're at 14-3 atop the Eastern Conference standings. 3 teams bunched back behind them, a game and a half back, that being the Celtics, Heat, and Raptors, all at 12-4. So, like we talked about a little last week, these are the teams. This is the race with the 76ers in there as well. Those are the 5 teams that are going to be jockeying for the East, the top of the East. The Bucks should probably be that team that finishes ahead, but obviously a long way to go. You mentioned the block by Brook Lopez, and I know you're going to write a little bit about this for jsonline.com. Should be able to find that article now. The versatility he brings to the table is really something. I mean, he is still, you know, he isn't just a guy who was once a great interior player. He is still a great interior player, and that's not ultimately how he's used, you know, much of the time, especially last year when he was bombing threes at a pretty impressive rate. Without that component clicking quite yet, he's still somebody who can go inside, make big blocks. He absolutely did that Monday night with a game-saving block at a very critical juncture to help the Bucks beat the Jazz. Just give us a sense of what you wrote about and sort of what you when you look at Brook Lopez, how you analyze this ability he has to kind of be whatever he needs to be for this Bucks team.
Yeah, I mean, I would even say, in terms of his rim protection and his defense, that he's better than he's ever been. Even going back to his days with the Nets and what he was asked to do with them, I think he's even better now. And maybe part of it is Mike Budenholzer's scheme, but he also is out there making the reads, like putting together perfect timing, and doing everything the Bucks are asking him to do as the last line of defense. I mean, last year, he had a career high 179 blocks, and this year he's on pace to have over 200 blocks, which is just, you know, really impressive. He contested more shots in the league than anyone in the league last year, and he's again on pace to contest more shots than anyone in the league again. Right now he's at 18.6 contested shots per game. The next closest guy, I think, is Jared Allen from the Nets, who is at 16.5. So Brook is contesting 2 more shots a game than anyone in the NBA, because that's how the Bucks defense is designed. You know, the guards have to do their job at the point of attack, taking away the 3-point shot, getting into the guy with the ball, and forcing him to drive. And then Brook's job is to, read that drive and then step up or go vertical where he already is and contest that shot. Force teams into tough mid-range shots, to difficult floaters, highly contested layups at the rim. And a lot of that has to do with having really great timing. I mean, that's what we saw on that play at the end of the game, where Donovan Mitchell, he's working against Pat Connaughton and Eric Bledsoe. The Bucks are only up 2. The shot clock is off. And obviously the last thing the Bucks can do is allow him to shoot a 3. And so, those guys know that, and they're defending, way up on him, forcing him to drive. Mitchell gets into the lane, and Brook is on the block on the opposite side of the lane that from where Mitchell is, heading to the hoop. And Brook has to hold, and just wait, because if he goes too soon, then Donovan Mitchell is going to know that he can pass to the corner where he had a guy wide open. But if he goes too late, then he's not going to have a chance to block Donovan Mitchell's shot. So Brook really has to time this out perfectly, and he waited all the way until until Mitchell collected the ball, one step into the paint. And that's when Brooke started to move laterally across the lane, and then, kind of turns and goes up, reaches with his 7-foot wingspan and gets a finger or two on the ball to block it off the backboard. And, we talked to Brooke after the game, and, he was saying that in that moment, what he's looking for is he wants to start his jumping motion second. He doesn't want to jump before Donovan Mitchell jumps. He wants to wait until he sees that Mitchell is going up. And in the split second after he sees Mitchell starting his shooting motion, that's when he wants to get up, because that is the time for him to be able to contest while also having given enough of a show that he can defend a pass to the corner or a dump off or anything like that. Because if he times it poorly, if Donovan Mitchell hasn't jumped yet, then Brooke jumps, gets caught in the air, he might foul him. Donovan could probably stop or one of those things. And then suddenly there's a pass out to the corner or a pass behind him, and he's in trouble. But he's trying to, time it out perfectly. He's trying to extend himself as much as possible. And even then, he admitted, which, I think is pretty on-brand self-deprecation from him. He's like, hey, I got lucky. He spent a lot of time in China and this summer, in the United States and Australia, playing with and against Donovan Mitchell, with Team USA. And he said there were plenty of times in those practices that he'd be in a similar situation and Donovan would kind of throw a shot all the way up to the roof and it would fall in over Brooke. He's like, so, I just got kind of just contested and got lucky. And it's like, well, I don't know if it was necessarily luck. Yes, Donovan Mitchell is a pretty incredible finisher and is world-class when it comes to, basketball players and scorers. But I think Brooke, also is pretty world-class when it comes to defending the rim, timing things out well, and just making things really, really difficult for guys on opposing teams.
That's the first game, this Jazz game, of 5 games in 8 days. It's not a very tough schedule in terms of opponents over the Thanksgiving holiday, but it is busy. They will again have the Hawks at Pfizer Forum on Wednesday night, and then another game on the other side of the Thanksgiving holiday in Cleveland on Friday. Charlotte is in Milwaukee for that back-to-back you mentioned on Saturday. The Bucks host the Knicks the subsequent Monday before they head out to Detroit on Wednesday, and then the Clippers are back in town on December 6th, so maybe that will be the Bucks' chance to see Kawhi and Paul George together. They missed both of them the first time around. Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks for joining us, Matt. Any last thoughts before we send you away for your Thanksgiving holiday?
Well, I think, talking about Brook Lopez, he has a thing where he wears the same hat for as long as the Bucks are winning. And so right now he has a Christian Yelich designed Brewers hat, which is the ball and glove logo, the old one, not the new one, that has the California state flag in the ball and glove logo. I quote tweeted it after the Indiana game, because it's pretty cool. It's a little interesting story. The hat has like a Yelich signature on the back. And so he wears that until they lose. And right now, he's been wearing it for 8 straight games. I think it's possible, with the schedule that you mentioned, that could get up to 13. I mean, Atlanta's a very winnable game. At Cleveland is winnable. At home against the Hornets is very winnable. The Knicks at home is you should really win that game or,
yes.
or it looks bad. And then at Detroit, also winnable. So, if that streak gets to 13, he'll be wearing it all the way going into that Clippers showdown on December 6th. It might get a little ratty. It might get a little worn. But I know people had reached out asking like, oh yeah, I wish I could buy one. It's like, well, I'm not here to necessarily carry water for Christian Yelich or the Brewers or sell you anything, but they are purchasable on MLB.com. I think you just look up Brewers, California flag, Christian Yelich hat, or something like that. You'll find it. Google works. So, yes, those things exist, and you can find them. And you can look like Brook Lopez.
We've talked a lot about what's enabled this team to win 8 straight games. Did not mention the hat, but the hat is key. Without the hat, I don't know what we've got going on. So sounds like something I should be writing about here in the next couple days. If this gets to double digits, I might start to give that hat some added love at jsonline.com. What do you think?
That sounds like a very reasonable thing to do.
I actually have my hat, my ball and glove logo packed for the Thanksgiving holiday already with the, it's similar to that one. Instead of the California flag, it's the People's Flag of Milwaukee, sort of a popular design that you see around town. So that is a double Milwaukee reference, but I do like the California flag with the bear in there as well. Obviously Christian Yelich is a California native, so that works out perfectly. And, it's a cool design. It's a cool design, and I think maybe I will write about it if this gets to double digits. Matt Velasquez of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Bucks every night. Thank you so much for joining us, Matt. We will chat with you again. Have a good holiday.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and for all of you listeners out there. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and don't look for any basketball that day because there is none. And let's appreciate that too.
That's true. Lots of NBA and college basketball, though, throughout the holiday season. You can find it if you want it. You can find this podcast at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Find it on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe and tweet out links on the regular. That's JRRADCLIFFE. He is at Matt_Velasquez. Check us out at JSOnline.com. Matt's writing every day about the Bucks. We put the podcast there as well. So many places where you can find the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. Thank you for listening this week. We will chat with you again real soon. Bye-bye. We'll